Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. You didn't sound very exciting there.
Well, I was leaning forward and then coming back
McClure.
To my microphone. So it was a... You heard the Doppler effect happen.
No, it was the Doppler. Voice. Well, if it's a Doppler, if you're moving forward, then it would have been higher than normal. It's actually
me
lower.
Coming back.
You're retreating.
Yes, I had already gone forward. Now
yeah, but I said once more unto the breach, dear, or into the breach, dear friend. Was it unto or into?
Unto.
And I didn't say once more away from the breach, dear friend.
Well, the microphone isn't the breach.
It isn't?
No, I'm just saying.
I think it's the breach, personally.
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
I already said that.
And across from me is an older, balding gentleman.
Where?
And sitting in my chair is a younger, balding gentleman. Younger than him, I guess that's a
You just relative promoted
statement.
Us to gentlemen. Did you notice that?
I'm doing that these days.
You are?
Yes.
Why?
Because I hear that gentlemen don't have to work, and I would really like to be in that position.
So say it and it shall come.
We're going to be gentlemen. Can we get a paycheck for doing nothing? That'd be kind of nice.
I know some people who do that. But they say they're tired twice.
Oh, yeah. They've been retired.
Right. That's it. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And this is a radio program, in case you didn't notice. I mean, you
most people probably knew what that was.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's always possible they thought it was just a voice from on high or something, just drifting.
True. And if you're hearing us in your head right now without...
It's because you have headphones on.
Either that or you've got some interesting metal in your head.
Could be. You could be really, really near the transmitter. And the telephone numbers to call in here. Well, let's just say that the Personal Wealth Coach has an alter ego.
Yes.
It's also known as an AKA... it's also known as the Personal Wealth Coach, but in a different identity. Our secret identity.
It's not very secret. We tell people about it regularly.
We tell people about it, but generally everybody knows that Superman and Clark Kent are the same guy. It's just, you know, so it's not really
a very secret. Not Lois Lane.
It's not really a secret identity. She's not real bright, I hate to tell you this. You know, the same guy that she sees at work every day, picks her up and holds her and flies her around wearing a tight bodysuit, and she can't tell it's the same guy because he's wearing glasses at work.
And you know why?
And his glasses are very clearly without corrective lenses.
Wait a minute. You're expecting intuition out of the media.
No, I'm expecting
that. She's a reporter.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach has a secret identity as an SEC registered, and who disguised as an SEC registered investment advisor for a great village
of Salado.
For a great village investment advisory firm, fights for truth, justice, and the American way.
We haven't really fought anyone over it.
I have, as a matter of fact, sir. I have fought long and hard on some occasions after vicious attack by villains. Well, Wait a minute. We're the villains.
We live in a village. That means we are villains.
Yeah, I actually live in the village. Jake is a citizen.
And if you live outside of town, then you're a knave. Because
Really? Knave
is external.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a villain because I live in a village. You can't actually be a citizen of a village because citizen means that you're in the city.
Yeah.
So you're the citizen and
you're
the villain.
You're a villagin.
I'm the villain. And if the village was named, I'm a Salado villain, but if the village was named Ugly, which is, by the way, a village used to exist, and London has absorbed it now, and in England, you would be an ugly villain. So.
Well, see, I don't live in Salado, so in doing that, I've deprived...
But you work in Salado.
I have deprived them of their idiot.
I'm going to think about that, because I know what the word means in French. Anyway.
It means childlike.
It means child, yeah. Les idiots means the children.
Okay. Yeah, anyway. So we are actually planning on talking about the finances of the world, our economy, and your economy.
And you can give us a call if you would like to ask us some questions or maybe bring our conversation back to something a little less inane. I like that. Inanity.
I don't think it's possible.
Okay. 773-1400 is the number to call if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else. You are asking me something right before the program started, you said, so what's new? And I was looking at my Yahoo Finance and looking over at, the articles that I have lined up to read. And I said, looks like it's exactly the same. Well, I hadn't refreshed the page.
Oh.
But even after...
You refreshed the page and you still didn't see anything.
Right. I refreshed the page and some of the numbers changed, but the headlines seemed pretty much the same.
Well, I like Morningstar's commentary. And by the way, if you guys want to read who I believe to be one of the better economists in the United States, is a guy named Robert Johnson, who works at Morningstar. And I don't know if you have to subscribe or if you can just go to Morningstar and read his stuff, but he really has some insights into the economy. And I really do like his approach, not because I know him or he's a particularly nice person or something, but simply because he's so often right. And he states the obvious so clearly. He said this week markets got excited by the U.S. Federal Reserve's potential delay of tapering bonds and mortgage purchases. Wonderful. Basically, he said nothing economic has changed recently.
Correct.
Of any significance. However, the market has gone up and down like a yo-yo based on their interpretation of odd mutterings of Chairman Bernanke.
Only it isn't that. It really isn't. I know a lot of people are putting the focus on Bernanke, but he's been saying the same thing for now 4 months about tapering off, possibly if the economy looks better at this time next year, we'll be tapering off, or we've got time in the next 14 months. That what he's saying hasn't changed. What we're seeing is summer volatility.
Mm-hmm. And it's, and I read a very interesting article on that this morning. If you look at the percentage volatility that we've had recently,
it's not that big a deal.
Well, it's normal.
Yeah.
What we had is an unusually smooth early part of the year.
Yeah.
And so now, and the point is, we look at the point movements, the three-digit point
right.
movements, the Dow Jones.
Dow Jones Industrial Average has moved 100 points today.
But you see, that's such a tiny percentage.
It's a percentage.
Of 15 or 16,000.
It's not even 1%.
But it's actually what's happened over the last month or so is the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone up, down, up, down, up, down, and is back now up as of the close of the week to record levels.
This is great. This is a perfect segue, something I had been planning on
right.
talking about, and you've handed it to me without even us discussing it, talking about the volatility. Are you familiar with the VIX?
Yes.
It's the volatility index, for those of you that are not nerds.
The VIX.
Like the VIX.
And it is...
Economists have been following this thing for a long time, going, oh, yes, we can tell lots about stuff because things are moving around a lot. Only about three studies have come out in the past month.
Mm-hmm.
The VIX is now used as a investment vehicle.
Which has changed the nature of the VIX.
Just like those of you that have been listening for any length of time whatsoever have listened to
Two
us
seconds.
Throughout the years, know that when we talk about the S&P 500 and index investing, the problem with it is an index is a measurement device. As soon as you start using it as an investment vehicle, it stops being able to measure what it was measuring. It's the old adage of if the Guinness Book of World Records record keepers showed up to certify the person with the longest measuring tape in the world, what would they measure it with? They would break their own record to do it.
No. A laser.
A laser. Oh, yes, a laser. So that's the concept we have here. The S&P 500 and the VIX, for that matter, are indexes. They're made to measure things. It's kind of like a brain gauge or something. And instead of being used as a measurement device anymore, they're quite often used as an investment vehicle, which changes the measurement. And if we were talking to physicists and every time they were making measurements, we went in and randomly changed it for them and smiled at them like, yep, we're providing a service for everyone. The physicists would not be very happy.
They actually aren't.
Right. And so the economists have recently had a hubbub, and I'm not sure what you call a group of economists. I know a group of lawyers is called a murder, isn't it?
No, that's a bar.
That's a bar. That's the crows that are the murder.
Yes.
So a group of lawyers is a bar. A group of economists have way too many hands.
See, a group of economists. So see, that is the dismal A group. No. A dismal of economists.
that would work. So they're all very upset. We're all very upset. Oh, the VIX is no longer usable to measure volatility in the marketplace because people are using it to buy things. When people can buy an option on whether or not the Standard & Poor's goes up or down, to me, that's like taking a bet on whether or not it's going to rain on a given day.
Yeah, but the difference is the bet on whether it's going to rain on a given
day.
That's
illegal. You can't do that unless you're in Vegas.
No, the bet on rain will not affect the probabilities of rain.
That's true. But if you
bet
on
the
market,
S&P will actually change.
Yes. If enough people bet on rain, it will rain. Well, that's what really happens in the market. If enough people bet on the market going up, it does, because in effect they're buying the market when they bet on it, and that's what causes the market to go up.
Well, you know, we talked about the fact that the S&P 500 and the Dow are sitting there at very nice, comfortably high positions, at least relatively so. Yes? Oh, we have a caller. We have a caller on 773-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, long-time listener. What's the real story on reverse mortgages? Driving down I-35. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, all real stories begin with once upon a time. I was informed of this by a 2-year-old niece of mine. She told me that was not the way the story started. Real stories start with once upon a time. Do you want to cover reverse mortgages? Do we want to hand it back and forth?
I think you got it. The real story...
It's a fairy tale.
The real story of reverse mortgages is fairly simple. The execution is complex. Reverse mortgages amount to... Let me give you the practical viewpoint on it.
Yes, practical.
Person, let's say a couple, is older, meaning they are well past their prime, and they're in retirement, and they don't have enough money to comfortably live. They've got, let's just say, their Social Security and little else, and they would rather live at a reasonable standard of living.
And they own their home.
Right, and they own their home. Well, I was going to get to that. Rather live at a reasonable standard of living, but the majority of their net worth is tied up in their house, which is completely paid for, let's say. And they would like to live comfortably in their old age. They would like to extract some money from the house, but they don't want to move out.
What is wrong with these people living comfortably in their old age?
Probably Democrats or something.
That's strange.
Anyway, so what they do is they go to a mortgage company, and the mortgage company says, hey, I tell you what, we will loan you a stream of income on the value of your house. And what they do, it's similar to the way an annuity works. In essence, what they're doing is annuitizing the value of their house, and it's almost, you know, just like an annuity, it can be set up many, many ways. One of them is you can set it up for so many years of guaranteed payments or life or joint life, and obviously it raises and lowers the payments. The more guarantees you get,
the lower the payment.
The lower the monthly income gets.
So we're going to talk about some of the benefits, and then we're going to hit a lot of the opposite of benefits, I guess, the problems with them.
So they can extract a stream of income out of the house. However, believe me, the mortgage company is not in it because they really love old people, and they're trying to be really, really nice to them.
Right.
And oddly enough, it is the reverse of mortgages, which is why it's called a reverse mortgage.
Well, that's why they did that.
In that the lower the interest rates are, the less monthly money you get.
Right. So the benefit is these people, these hypothetical people, they exist out there. There aren't a huge number of them, but they
exist. Hypothetical people exist?
Hypothetically, they exist. These hypothetical people hypothetically exist. And in a very rare set of circumstances, let's lay out the circumstances where this is beneficial to the people that own the home. Interest rates are relatively high, so that the money coming to them is relatively high. That's about the greatest benefit there. Because if they were to die before they got much money out of the house...
Well, they can have a guaranteed so many years of income.
Right, right. They have to choose the right guarantee. And if you got that, then you get a lower income. If they die before a certain amount of time, depending on how the reverse mortgage is set up, and they can be set up in many different ways. In some cases, the bank is basically buying the house. In other cases, the bank is only loaning money on the house. Either way, it's much harder to sell the house because then you have to figure out who the money was loaned to for what period of time and what the guaranteed payment options were on the reverse mortgage. And if they have any heirs who thought, I want the house that I grew up in, there are a lot of hoops to jump through, and in some cases,
they have to buy the house.
In some cases, they would have to buy the house. It's not given for free.
Yeah, the bank basically takes the house when you die, or the mortgage, the annuity company, it's not really an annuity company.
Or puts it on the market for sale.
Yeah, but they take it and put it on the market for sale, and then they, in most cases, if you died, let's say a couple took out a reverse mortgage on the house, and they chose joint life expectancy and no guarantees of any number of years of income,
right,
then and the couple then got 1 month of income and they were in a car wreck and died. Well,
not a good thing.
Well, it is if you happen to be a shareholder in the company that did the reverse mortgage.
Right. And they just made a lot of money.
But the other side of it is if one or both of the couple that were living in the house lives to the ripe old age of 120 or so,
that company's not making a lot of money.
Well, they lost money on the deal. But you know, and
well,
so
it depends on the interest rate too.
No, they probably lost money on the deal because it's based on, it's just like an annuity. An annuity company, a life insurance company issues annuities. And by the way, life insurance companies are one of the principal loaners in these deals.
Yeah. And the way they make money is if you die when you have life, and when you don't have life insurance and you've had it in the past, or when you...
But if you die soon, the life insurance company or the mortgage company, in essence, is betting that you're going to die soon, and you're betting you're going to live a long time.
Yeah.
It's the reverse of life
insurance. That's the reverse mortgage
concept.
But, you
know, it's a very valuable tool for people who have a house they want to continue to live in. They want to have a stream of income.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no desire to pass it on to their heirs.
So
it works, you know. But you do need this. This is the key. Approach this with some degree of caution. Don't just go to the first one that you see and take them up on the deal, because there's a lot of moving parts in here and there's a lot of deep paperwork. You need to have an attorney involved. People generally don't have an attorney involved.
Yeah. One of the key factors here is understanding something very clearly. If you own a house outright and you're not living comfortably, downsizing a lot of times is more beneficial. If you sell the house and buy a new house or rent somewhere, that is far more beneficial financially. So recognizing a key point here at the beginning, there is an emotional blinder on. It may be something that is worth making the decision about. You want to live in the house that means something to you. That's an emotional blinder. Be aware of that and get some people that are able to advocate for you in the process, because if that's the first premise, I want to stay in my house because it's my house and I love it. You're loving an inanimate object. That's an emotion that gets in the way when you're talking to a bank about finances, because you love something. They don't love it. They don't love you. They're going to make their decisions based on how do they make the most money out of the deal. So you need to have somebody who isn't emotional about the house or about living comfortably standing next to you going, that's a really good idea or that's a really bad idea on your team.
It's important whenever you do a real estate transaction of any size that you hire an attorney and you pay the attorney's fees, and preferably one who specializes in real estate, not just any attorney. I can't tell you how many times.
I'm going to say it's not on any size. If you're buying bagged dirt,
you don't need
that's a very small real estate that you're purchasing.
Anything,
it's mobile real estate.
Anything where you've got a title transfer on real estate, I think it's very important to be willing to pay an attorney to advise you on it.
I showed up at the gardening section of Home Depot with an attorney at a law firm, and they were very confused at the contract. No, I didn't.
Do not believe a word this man
I
says.
Want to make a real estate transaction for this bag of dirt.
Well, we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Robert, and I was listening to you, and I'm a local CPA, and I've had that question about the reverse mortgage. And I've always used the equivalency of a viatical in
yes.
my mind, but they have the same trip ups and problems.
Absolutely.
So that's just an FYI for y'all as y'all go through that explanation.
Yeah, but most people don't know what a viatical is.
Yeah, a viatical is when someone buys, either gets you a life insurance policy or buys one that you already own when you are terminally ill.
Well, sometimes when you're not terminally
ill. When they just think you're going to die from terminal old age.
Fundamentally, my answer on viaticals is run, don't walk in the other direction. I hope you agree with us on that.
Exactly.
Under all circumstances.
Just FYI there.
Okay,
yeah,
thank
thanks
you.
For the call, Robert.
Appreciate the call. And there is, and you notice on the viatical, we're dealing with life insurance, and I told you that life insurance companies are involved in
reverse mortgages.
It's an interesting thing. There is another aspect to reverse mortgages. Hang on.
The word mortgage itself
means to die.
It actually means death expectancy. Anyway,
okay,
go ahead.
This is important. I want you to, if you're thinking about a reverse mortgage and you're listening, or you know somebody that's thinking about a reverse mortgage and listening, here is what none of the articles I have read point out as a major threat, and it's a big one. When you enter into a reverse mortgage, somebody is promising to pay you a stream of income.
Correct.
You really need to know who is promising you, and you need to really thoroughly recognize the government does not insure that. It's not like a bank certificate of deposit. If the company promising you the stream of income 10 years from now or whenever becomes insolvent, you will find yourself living in a house that belongs to someone else with nobody paying you.
Yeah. You can't sell it because it's not yours.
Right.
Yeah.
You have contractual, and you will become then an unsecured creditor of whatever entity is promising to pay you. And
now,
let me give you one other thing.
It can be actually set up where you own the same rights that a bank does when they issue a mortgage on a house, where you have to repossess at auction.
Foreclosure at auction. If they go into bankruptcy, you don't really have that. In most cases,
it just depends on the contract.
In most cases, they will secure themselves against, because they're going to sell this loan, if you will. They basically, you have loaned them some money. They're paying you interest on it. They're going to go ahead and sell that. So it's going to be very, very, very hard to deal with if the company. And this is an unexplored area because reverse mortgages are relatively new. So we don't have a lot of court decisions on them at this point. But I'm telling you that there is a risk here, a very definite risk. And people think when they get involved with an insurance company, that's why I compared it to an annuity.
They think it's safe.
The gentleman who called just a moment ago, Robert, said a viatical company. There's a viatical company locally that is reportedly, according to the news media and according to some people that I have encountered who have invested in it, not able to make payments anymore. And they gave them a whole lot of money. And they're not getting any money back. And the company is, I say locally, it's in Texas. And the company is in the position where they're saying, okay, we're in bankruptcy, so when the bankruptcy hearing is over, we'll figure out how much you get. And to tell you how bad that can get, this is a point that's critical for me, okay? Excuse me for monopolizing this for a little bit. But if you had an annuity with Executive Life of New York, when in the 1980s it went bankrupt, this year you got back your 30 cents on the dollar.
Nice.
Do you realize how long you had to wait? I mean, if you had your annuity sitting there and they were seized by the state of New York.
What is it, 33 years? That's not a problem.
About 30 years ago.
On a 30-year period, you've lost 70% of what was owed to you.
Not counting inflation.
Nice.
And the thing is that people just don't appreciate the fact that if you put your money into a fixed annuity, and variable annuities are different, but if you put your money into a fixed annuity or loan your money in any way to an insurance company,
you're just a creditor.
And it's and people think, well, it's kind of like the bank. If I put money in the bank, I get a CD. FDIC, which
doesn't
is
do that. Yeah.
We now know is backed pretty thoroughly by the federal government, will replace your money if the bank becomes insolvent. But
they
if
won't
the insurance
do anything
company
for you there.
Becomes insolvent, yes, there are some state guarantee funds, but this is the, you have to. Let me tell you,
living in the state of the company and a lot of other things like that are important.
Yes, and if you happen to live in the state where the company is residing when it goes bankrupt, and when you bought it, and when it settled, and you all have to, I mean, as a matter of fact, some of the people who were living in the appropriate states when Executive Life of New York was seized. But aren't living in those states today did not get the state guarantee fund from their respective states.
It's all very disturbing, but one of the things that is most disturbing about this is the glee at which we pounce on these subjects and point and say how bad this is with big grins on our faces. It's just a strange thing that we do.
Grin?
Yeah, we were both smiling about it. Look how horrible this is. It's kind of like this smells bad. You want to smell it?
We're just kids. Idiot comes to mind.
We're looking at it going, man, oh, that's horrible. How do we deal with it? We're going to smile.
The reason, and I'll just tell you, the reason is really simple. For over the years, we've said stay away from fixed annuities.
Yeah. So we're patting ourselves on the back for other people's financial ruin.
Horrible. And the other thing, and since we're on that subject right now.
Can I hit it one
you
more?
You may hit it.
You mentioned this, and it's very clearly important having an attorney involved because there are certain circumstances when a reverse mortgage is necessary. Having an attorney involved and making sure that you do have the same rights as a bank that has issued a mortgage so that you can foreclose on your own house if you need to at lack of payments. I have heard of some people doing it, but the vast majority of people do not.
And they just don't want to pay the attorney. And there's people who, we've run across this over the years, in the sale of a house, have not got an attorney involved on their side, who have lived to regret it, because it turned out that something was wrong with that. There's an attorney, and you have to pay an attorney to review the documents as part of the sales process, but that attorney is not working for you. You need to, any time that you have a large financial transaction, it's really important that there be somebody who is a fiduciary involved giving you advice, who is working for you, who you are paying.
Now, I interrupted you to say this thing again and reiterate about the contract, but you had something else you were going to go on your soapbox about. Was it this?
Anybody who is offering you a fixed rate of return, a guaranteed rate of return that is higher than you can get by buying a 10-year, brand new 10-year United States Treasury note is exposing you to risk. Now, that's a hard one to accept. Right now, a 10-year Treasury note, if you could buy one, if you can actually buy them from the Federal Reserve Bank directly in Dallas. And it's $10,000. No, it's not. You can buy them for $1,000 denominations.
Yeah.
It's T-bills that are $10,000. You can buy them for in denominations of $1,000. And they'll pay you, it just jumped from 1.6 to 2.6. So you can get 2.6% guaranteed for 10 years, which doesn't sound too exciting. Anybody that's offering you more than that, you need to recognize that there is a risk involved. And the higher the interest rate gets, the greater the risk gets. If you're in the marketplace, if you're in the stock market or you've got a balanced portfolio and somebody says, and there's kind of a rule of thumb, 4% or 5% a year plus inflation. Well, if inflation averages 3, you're talking about 8% a year. And you're going, wow, okay, there's risk there. Well, yeah, but the risk is you're going to see a variation in underlying value. If you have a well-diversified portfolio throughout history, by accepting that well-diversified portfolio and the ups and downs in the market, and the downs are the ones you remember, by the way, you have never, the United States stock, the stock market of the United States, the corporations of the United States so far have never gone out of business. Now, they might one day. Closest they got was about 1934, but they have been in business a really long time. The United States economy, the corporate economy of the United States, and the chances of it going out of business and something else staying in business is pretty small. So I think you're pretty safe there. On the other hand, if you said, I don't want to see any variation in my value, I don't want to accept market risk, so I'm going to go to the XYZ company, whatever company is offering you an income, and they say, they're promising me 6% a year. And believe me, they're out there that will do that. Folks, you have assumed a risk of total loss. Anytime that you don't see, Jake calls it the cattail theory, anytime that you don't see movement in the underlying value of your portfolio, of your investment, of whatever you're doing, and yet you're getting a rate of return higher than that offered by the United States Treasury, in this case, Treasury bills, because even the 10-year Treasury note will go up and down in value every day. Anytime that you're getting an above zero interest rate and you don't see movement in the underlying value, one of two things is true.
The cattail theory.
You either have something guaranteed by the FDIC, in which case you're getting about 1.5%, maybe 1% is more like it. Or if you're getting a higher rate, that particular cat may be dead. You don't know it. You know,
the cattail theory is this simply, and this is something I did as a child.
It's actually Schrodinger's cattail theory.
Well, no, Schrodinger, because then you don't even know if it's alive or dead. It's both at the same time until
it.
You look at it.
You don't know if it's there until you won't go to take the money out.
All right. The cattail theory is simply this, and and I've been able to apply this to large socioeconomic systems, as in, like, for instance, the Roman Empire. If you are sitting next to a cat, cats like to be sat next to often, so their tail is twitching lightly, just little twitches, tiny amount of volatility in the tail. If you reach down as an outside force and stabilize that cat's tail, if you reach down and grab that tail and hold it, even if the cat is comfortable, which is a questionable concept with their tail being held, when you release the tail, when you stop putting your concentration on keeping the volatility down in that tail, when that tail is released, I don't care if the cat was comfortable or not, the tail is going to fly all over the place. And that is what I'm talking about here. When external influences are dampening the volatility of something, as soon as that external influence goes away, you're going to get a lot of volatility, even if it's a fairly calm situation to begin with.
Well, this is where I said it should be called Jake's Schrodinger cattail theory. Schrodinger's cat, for those of you who don't know it, is and I won't go into the great detail about the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle or anything else, but I'll simply say that it's a cat that's in a box. It's a hypothetical cat, which is a rare breed.
It's a very, very small box and a very, very small cat.
Well, it's a cat in a box. And you don't know if the cat is alive or dead until you open the box. And, of course, what Schrodinger's presentation was, and he thought it was silly at the time, but it has become something of reality, is the cat, according to Heisenberg, is not alive or dead until you open the box and look. And the same thing is true, oddly enough.
Just real quick, Schrodinger has a set of formulas that will predict the location of small particles, for instance, an electron. So the whole area around an atom, the electrons in all of those places, according to his math, until you measure it, and then suddenly it's only in that one spot. So what Heisenberg was saying is that it's in all the places until you look at it, and then it's only in one spot. That's what we're talking about. Anyway, go ahead.
He's just told you what I'm talking about.
Yes.
What I'm trying to say is, in a company that has a black box, and again, let's talk about, let's say, an insurance company where you have a fixed annuity and they're paying you a nice high interest rate. You don't know whether the company is bankrupt or not bankrupt until you try to withdraw the money. And if everybody tries to withdraw the money,
by definition, it is bankrupt at that point.
And so the point is, you don't know until you open the box. And the fact is, the company may be completely solvent unless everybody decides to open the bank and box. If a significant number of people try to open the box at the same time, the company ceases to be solvent. So the act of looking changes the thing observed, which is geeky stuff for us. But it's one of those things in finance. It's really important. If what you're investing is exposed to the light of day and is transparent, you're going to see scary things on a regular basis. But you're far safer there than in something that is a closed black box and they say, trust us, we guarantee your money. Remember that if you don't remember much of anything else about what we're babbling about today. But we're going to do some commercials that I'm sure Town Square Media would like you to remember forever. So we'll be back after these important words from their sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I have a subject if you're lacking one.
Well, I've got lots of subjects, but you're certainly... I'm a king, you know.
We're grammatically correct if we have many subjects, but...
No, that means we're royalty.
Amazing.
We have many subjects.
Many subjects.
Yes.
I was going to talk a little bit about interest rates and the housing market.
Well, I was actually going to talk about interest rates, too, and note that they've come
in the housing market or the...
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
That interest rates jump from 1.6 to about 2.6.
Yeah.
Which is about a 60% jump in intermediate term interest rates.
Yeah. Long term interest rates have actually gone up about 60 to 70% as well.
And as a result, if you owned fixed interest securities, you've seen them decline. And obviously, we've been talking about that happening over the long term. And you're probably going to talk about the long-term implications of that.
We got multiple sides of this. First off, if you're looking at getting a mortgage right now, it's probably a good idea to go ahead and lock in the rate because this is not unusual when record low interest rates are around. It's not unusual to get higher interest rates not long afterwards.
Oh, you're trying to say after record high temperatures in the summertime, as we coast into the rest of the year, the temperatures tend to decline?
Sometimes.
Oh, okay.
If they're cyclical. You know, sometimes you've got...
You have cyclical?
Sometimes the temperature can go up in specific localities if there's a hot enough fire. It just depends on how big a system you're talking about. So in certain circumstances, it's still possible to get a really good deal on houses. But something important to recognize here. When interest rates are going up on a long-term loans, it affects the real estate market. It affects it directly because people do not buy houses based on the value of the house, the large number of the house value. That is generally not why people buy it. They buy it for the home payment every month. When interest rates go up, that home payment goes up, which means people can afford larger houses less. It's a lot harder.
They can afford large houses less.
Yes. I'm only going to have one large house this year.
That was an amazing... It's just one of those amazing sentences. They can afford large houses less.
Yes.
They can afford less houses large? Never mind.
Something like that.
Right.
So the concept here to be aware of, quite important. The real estate market, while it's probably hit the bottom and it's probably well on the way to recovery even, we shouldn't expect the same kind of rapid growth in value in houses that we saw prior to the Great Recession. Because...
Can I add something?
Sure, absolutely.
Locally, it may not have hit bottom.
Correct. Well,
the bottom may be in the future.
Yes. Locally, that is true. It's also true. I live in Austin. The bottom was hit about 2 years ago in Austin. It's been going up drastically ever since. So locally, again, the local areas, you might have a fire in your wood stove, and that will increase the heat even in winter.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, when we talk about the overall market for housing, don't expect the housing market to act the way it did for your parents. There are a lot of people out there that say, my parents made money in real estate
Mine didn't.
30 years. Well, your parents 30 years ago were not making money in real estate because that's how long the long-term cycle lasts.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's something people don't remember back that far. Real estate is very important to have in portfolios. I'm not saying real estate is a bad thing. I am saying being aware of expectations and reality is a very good idea.
Well, the village of Salado announced that they were going to, they had a big surplus last fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And they suddenly realized they were having a big triple digit deficit in this coming fiscal year.
Triple digits? That's like $101?
That's like triple digit thousand.
Oh, like oh. So that's actually six.
I think they were saying like $170,000.
Okay,
you're
talking about. That's six.
And the reason.
That's six digits. That's not three.
Well, triple digit thousands. You're right.
Yeah, your digits are measured in thousands.
Right. And, okay. And you're completely correct. But they were having.
We're having $101 deficit this
year.
Well,
they're looking at a deficit, and they're looking at a deficit because the county has informed them, hey, guess what? The property in the village of Salado that you get taxes on is worth less than it was last year.
Yep.
And there's a lag there, but there's another factor. As interest rates go up, all other things being equal, real estate values go down.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean if the economy is recovering, the commercial real estate values will go down because there was more demand. There's a lot of other things involved.
Right. And just a real quick, for instance here, if you don't mind, rental real estate, it might be still a good thing. There's a lot of decisions to make here in that when mortgage rates go up and property values have not settled to a lower amount because the rates have gone up yet, there's a little sweet spot in there, but with a lot of research needed, obviously, where rent is profitable.
In the broad economy, you're probably right. But one of the things, and I've warned about this before, if you happen to be listening right now,
it's
really important to understand, the government is cutting jobs. Furloughs started this week.
Yeah.
What that means is, and the government employees, several of them I've talked to, are getting, I thought it was not going to be that frequent, but it looks like they're not working one day a week. That's a 20% cut.
Wait a minute.
Their pay.
These are government workers?
These are government.
And they're not working one day a week?
They're required to stay home?
I thought they got paid for not working.
That's not true.
That's not true. It was a horrible statement for me.
But the point is that their pay is being cut and they're being warned. Apparently, this is a warning that came out fairly recently across many government civilian positions that next year they may lose their job. And it used to be the government working for the federal government was as secure as you could get in the world, but it is apparently not anymore. And, again, this was in the papers. It's nothing that's new. The Army, if sequestration isn't changed, and we are facing, and we're going to get into it next hour, what several economists have called the perfect governmental storm late this year.
Another one?
Well,
because the fiscal cliff was all about being a perfect governmental storm.
This one has the potential to be bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger than the fiscal cliff later this year.
I think it's a different fiscal cliff.
Robert Johnson at Morningstar has pointed out that in the first quarter, government spending reductions lower GDP about 1%.
Yes,
and we got to do some more commercials.
Yes, we've got more commercials to play.
And the local real estate market may take a big hit in the next couple of years. So yeah, we'll be back on the other side. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Are we really starring?
You're the one that says that. You are an astronomer, amateur astronomer. So if you say we are starring, we are starring.
I need to sell one of my pictures.
You're going to sell it?
I need to sell a photograph. I've got copyrights
on it. So you're no longer an amateur?
So I will no longer be an amateur. At that point, yes. I can be a professional astronomer.
Or at least a photographer.
A professional astrophotographer.
There you go. Yes.
But that is a lot to say.
It's a lot easier to be a professional astrologist.
I don't know if anyone would buy my astrological portents.
I don't know. People spend a lot of money on those things. I don't understand.
I don't want
it to
be an astrologer.
I don't either. But what's your sign? Oh, this tells me much about me. It tells me you were born in October.
Going to talk about this a little more next hour, all the implications. But in case you have to leave, and we're about out of time for this hour, I just wanted to tell you that fasten your seatbelt. But it's not going to. We're not going to crash because the underlying United States economy is quite healthy. But there's a lot of moving parts out there that are coming into place. But the government is by far and away the largest consumer in the United States. It is big, and we've got a series of things coming up.
Yeah, what you said right before the break was that
we got the sequestration going to hit on October 1st, and you said, well, it's January 1st. No, that was only a partial sequestration. The big one hits October 1st.
Correct.
We have the debt ceiling that's going to come about that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federal Reserve had said they're going to bring the subject up of curtailing their bond purchases sometime this fall. Well, sometime this fall coincides with all this other stuff that's going on. And the government has the potential to scare a lot of people come October. Yeah. Whether they will or not, I don't know. Whether it will or not, I don't know. But the potential is there. By the way, I don't think the Fed is going to raise rates or significantly cut their bond buying until next year.
I agree.
Because of all this other stuff happening.
So you know what they've said?
They want to pull it back. What?
They have said that they're probably not going to decrease their bond buying until next year.
Oh, they did.
It's amazing that they would say things
that
we...
Well, that's because I channel Ben Bernanke.
Yes, and we say, we think that they're not going to do that. Well, how would you know? Well, they said it a few times.
Well,
could be.
Not officially. And some of the Fed governors are emphatically say we got to stop it by the end of the year, but the voting members, it's pretty clear there's a majority that says no. Let's talk about doing that next year after we get past the debt ceiling, after we get past the effects of sequestration, and we'll get into this more next hour.
Yeah,
inflation. The inflation numbers came in are beginning to come in for wholesale inflation and so on.
Producers' price index is a little bit up.
It's a little bit up, but when you look across the board, the for instance, both exports and imports prices dropped.
Yeah.
So we've got deflation going on.
Lots of good stuff to talk about next hour. But if in the meantime, if you'd like to talk to us or leave us a message off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111. I had a mouthful.
I did that on purpose.
Dr.
Yes.
Pepper.
And you can also reach us toll-free, again, voicemail at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, as in the personal wealth coach. Or you can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts and other inanity.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would they want to do that?
I don't know. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.